Down, Set, Short.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer ganz besonderen Folge Down, Set, Short mit mir, Christoph Kröger, und Adrian Franke.
Einen wunderschönen guten Tag.
Aber es kommt gleich noch eine dritte Person ins Spiel. Beziehungsweise ich klinke mich aus und ich werde ersetzt. Ich habe nämlich eigentlich nichts mit dieser Folge zu tun, Adrian. Was ist da los?
Es stimmt, ja. Ja, naja, wir sind halt jetzt hier mittlerweile doch sehr weit in der Draft-Vorbereitung. Und ich hatte mir eben gedacht, vielleicht noch so einen äußeren Einfluss, den man mal mit dazu holen könnte. Wir hatten ja über die Quarterbacks jetzt schon vor ein paar Wochen auch gesprochen. Aber das Thema reißt ja nicht ab. Ich war jetzt auch gerade noch im 49ers-Podcast zu Gast. Und alle reden jetzt natürlich auch noch mal, gerade wo der Draft näher rückt, über die Quarterbacks.
Klar.
Und da dachte ich mir, warum nicht einen, der da echt Ahnung von hat, noch mit dazu holen. Und ich hatte letztes Jahr schon mal mit JT O'Sullivan ein Interview gemacht. Der ein oder andere wird ihn vielleicht kennen von seinem YouTube-Channel.
Das muss man vielleicht kurz mal erklären. Wer ist JT O'Sullivan? Weil ja, den kennen bestimmt einige durch YouTube, dank YouTube, ich auch.
Genau.
Aber ich glaube, das sind dann, wenn man unsere ganze Hörerschaft anguckt, doch eher noch die wenigsten.
Wahrscheinlich, ja, wahrscheinlich.
Die wenigeren, ja.
Kennen den eher dann, zumindest aus der aktiven Zeit, vermutlich weniger. Also der YouTube-Channel erstmal The QB School. Mhm. Wer ihn nicht kennt, den sollte man sich auf jeden Fall mal anschauen. Da lernt man richtig viel eigentlich mit jedem Video. War ein langjähriger Quarterback auf NFL-Level, würde ich so sagen. Also er hat auch in der NFL Europe gespielt für ein Jahr und dann eben lange Backup gewesen, teilweise gestartet in San Francisco, so um die 2008, glaube ich, war bei den Niners, also so diese Range in etwa reden wir, 6-Runden-Pick gewesen, 2002. Mhm. Und bringt halt einen, wenn man sich seine Videos anschaut, bringt halt nochmal so einen eigenen Touch mit in diese ganze Quarterback-Analyse, weil er einfach viel gesehen hat und er dann sagen kann, okay, das Play von dem Coach, das kenne ich, weil das kommt aus dieser Offense und so weiter und so fort, und kann dann halt sagen, worauf es da ankommt und was die Nuancen sind und so weiter. Und er hat sich natürlich intensiv auch mit den Quarterbacks in diesem Draft auseinandergesetzt, die ja mittlerweile also wirklich sehr, noch eigentlich noch mehr als wir unsere Folge aufgenommen haben damals, noch kontroverser diskutiert werden, habe ich so den Eindruck. Gerade jetzt natürlich mit dem 49ers Uptrade.
Ja, Mac Jones ist jetzt plötzlich richtig, ein sicherer Top-10-Pick
gefühlt. Richtig, ja, wirkt auf jeden Fall so. Dazu habe ich ihn natürlich gefragt, wie er den sieht, wie er einen Spieler wie Trey Lance einschätzt, der einfach noch schwer einzuschätzen ist, und dann natürlich auch generell zu seiner Herangehensweise. Also worauf achtet er und hat er irgendwie eine Checklist, wenn er sich Quarterbacks anschaut, so all diese Sachen, die so seinen Prozess auch drumherum betreffen.
Ganz kurz noch, bevor wir in das Interview starten, was hast du so für ein Empfinden nach dem Interview gehabt? Ich finde es nämlich immer ganz spannend, dann, wenn man die Leute, die man irgendwie aus der Öffentlichkeit oder jetzt in dem Fall ja auch durch YouTube kennt, dann persönlich kennenlernt und mit denen quatscht. Wie, ist jetzt nicht das erste Mal gewesen, aber
genau,
was für ein Typ ist es?
So der entspannteste Typ, den man sich vorstellen kann. Also auf eine sehr, wenn du dir so einen entspannten California-Guy vorstellen würdest, so redet er halt auch und so so gechillt ist er dann tatsächlich auch. Also sehr, sehr unkompliziert, sehr, aber sehr klar in seinen Analysen. Das mag ich sehr. Nicht gespielt sozusagen. Und weiß halt einfach extrem gut, von was er redet. Und das ist halt in manchen Sachen für mich auch nochmal ein anderer Input gewesen. Sachen, die ich jetzt vielleicht nicht so auf dem Schirm hatte. Auch zu dieser Draft-Klasse. Und ja, er sieht auch ein, zwei Spieler noch ein bisschen anders als wir, kann ich schon verraten.
Spannend. Eine kurze Anekdote möchte ich noch erzählen, weil ich hatte einen schlechten Start mit ihm.
Wirklich?
Ja, was heißt Start? Er kennt mich nicht. Ich habe seine Videos geguckt und er hat ein mega gutes Tool, um die Live-Analyse, also er macht sie quasi, während er darüber spricht, macht er auch die Analysen und zeichnet in seine Videos und so weiter. Ja. Und ich wollte wissen, welches Tool er dafür benutzt und habe das dann in die Kommentare geschrieben. Hier, welchen virtuellen Stift benutze dafür? Und dann hat er geantwortet, ja, ich sag's an der und der Stelle. Und es scheint ein Running Gag bei ihm zu sein, dass er so oft gefragt wird, dass er das nicht beantwortet. Und dann hat er mich halt verarscht und hat mir irgendeine irrelevante Stelle genannt, wo er sagt, and the pen is called Und da war ich so sauer. Aber das ist sein Humor, der hat einen ganz trockenen Humor, oder?
Total, also, ja, ja, total. Ja.
Da war ich aber echt kurz angepisst, weil ich dann natürlich, nach 5 Minuten Recherche hatte ich es auch raus. So. Da dachte ich so, oh, come on, das hättest du mir auch einfach sagen können. Aber ja, ich kann mir das sehr gut vorstellen, dass er ein sehr entspannter Typ ist. Und seine Videos mag ich auch sehr. Muss ich mir mal wieder mehr zu Gemüte führen. Ist halt auch ein bisschen Commitment, weil ist die sind es, ja. sehr ja. in-depth ja. und sehr Detail.
Aber gerade wenn ihr jetzt, wo wir jetzt auch natürlich auch eigentlich fast nur drüber gesprochen haben, eben die Quarterback-Klasse, wenn ihr jetzt zum Beispiel sagt, weiß ich nicht, ihr seid Jets-Fan und geht davon aus, naja gut, es könnte natürlich auch eine Überraschung werden, aber wahrscheinlich wird es Zach Wilson sein an 2. Dann hat er halt so Zach Wilson, ich weiß es gar nicht, wie viel es mittlerweile sind, 5 oder 6 Videos, wo er halt wirklich in jedem Video auf ein Spiel mehr oder weniger schaut. Vielleicht auch mal auf 2, ich glaube aber meistens ist es ein Spiel. Und das ist halt dann schon sehr, sehr cool, weil du dann wirklich oder natürlich Jaguars-Fan ist noch offensichtlicher, dann nimmst du natürlich Trevor Lawrence. Und da kannst du dir wirklich ein extrem gutes Bild von dem Spieler machen, eben mit dem entsprechenden Videomaterial und dem Hintergrundwissen auch einfach, was die Position angeht dazu.
Ja, aber bevor ihr auf seinen Channel geht, abonniert ihr natürlich unseren Channel, falls ihr uns da gerade hört. Aber ich wünsche euch ganz viel Spaß mit dem Interview von Adrian mit JT O'Sullivan.
I'm very happy to welcome JT O'Sullivan today. JT, how are you doing? How is the draft preparation going?
I mean, is it the draft tomorrow? I feel like we've had our run with this, but no, it's exciting. It's a fun time to be involved, not involved, but it's a fun time to enjoy ball and this kind of part of the process. And so exciting stuff.
Yeah, I've seen you posting obviously a lot of analysis on your YouTube channel recently, particularly looking at the quarterbacks, top quarterback prospects in the draft. How much time have you spent on those guys at this point? It must be like several days, right? Studying and all that stuff.
I mean, it feels like it. Basically, everything that I've watched, I put up there. So it probably is what it is when it comes to that. But honestly, it's one of the things that I most enjoy about this process for me is I think sometimes there's this like veil of secrecy. Like how are people being evaluated? How can you really, look at this process? And if you're transparent about, hey, this is what we're looking at, this is what I'm looking at, this is what I think is transferable to Sundays and et cetera, I think it makes it a little bit more digestible to people who aren't necessarily in the room or have never been in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you have like some sort of, I don't know, checklist, probably the wrong word, but I'm sure there are certain things you value higher when looking at quarterback, when analyzing quarterbacks. Are there some things that a quarterback, like, I don't know, has to have in your opinion, or stuff that you, when you look at a quarterback you haven't seen before, you're really paying attention to and say, okay, if he has that, then I can start looking at the rest?
I mean, yes and no, I guess is the easiest way I can say it is I just look at this almost like, you're already on the team. We're on the team together. It's a quarterback meeting room. Like, how would we talk about this film?
Okay.
And it's not necessarily of me going through like, hey, if they can't throw the ball straight, I'm not going to look at them. I really rely on other people. Once you get past like the top tier of people to say, hey, you should check out this player. Hey, you should check out this player, just because I don't watch that much college football during the fall normally in a normal year. So rely on other people to kind of point me in the right direction. And then if I enjoy it and I'm curious about either the offense, the institution, the player, I'll watch more and more of it. This year, Zach Wilson is a perfect example. In the past, I've never watched this much BYU offense, but I enjoy, obviously Zach Wilson's getting a lot of attention. I also enjoy the offense as someone who likes American football. I'm curious about how they do things, how they structure their offense. And so I'm watching more and more of that than I ever have in the past. And that's kind of how it goes. It's just a curiosity thing. But when you're talking about kind of things that I look for that jump off the tape, for me are things that I think are transferable to Sundays. And that usually starts and ends with accuracy, just having the ball control to put it where you want consistently. And then I enjoy like the off-platform throws, the changing the arm angles. Anticipation is another one that pops off. I don't think it's a disqualifier if you don't have it all over your film. But if you do, I think it's a great indicator that you're going to be able to play a long time on Sundays.
So like those are obviously three very important factors if you put them together. But do you think that some of it can be rather, I'm not saying easily, but can be taught maybe a little bit easier than the others? Like, for example, I always thought accuracy is something, it's harder to learn. if you already struggled at the college level, it's hard to come in the NFL and get better at it. But obviously we have seen like Josh Allen get significantly better at it in, over the last like 2 or 3 years. So are there aspects of quarterback play in your opinion that are harder or easier to work on once you get to the NFL, like where all those guys actually are right now?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with luck. And people don't love hearing that, but it depends on the system that you're in. It depends on what they're asking you to do, who your quarterback coach is, what your coordinator stresses. All those things go into play. I think that you can get better at damn near everything, except maybe like taller. You know, you
bigger hands, but, stuff like that.
Yeah. Like that element is certainly a bonus. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're blessed with that type of stuff, but definitely think you can. The quickest fix is oftentimes the footwork. Mm-hmm. And if you're not used to the precision of what a timing footwork kind of NFL offense offers, I think it's hard to learn because there is so much detail and everything is tethered together as far as your timing, the depth, the rhythm of the passing game, all those types of things. But once you learn it once, you can play in any offense. And it goes from there. Then once you kind of get that base and footwork, I feel like you have the opportunity to become more accurate because you know where the ball is supposed to go, mm-hmm. when it's supposed to be there, what the expectations are for the delivery, the kind of throws, all those types of things that improve with experience. But you also need to get that experience, whether you're playing, whether you're developing within the organization, all those things kind of go hand in hand. So I think that they're all things that can be improved upon. I think that you're touched on the right element there as far as the accuracy. A lot of coaches I've been around think if you're not accurate in college, there's no way you're going to be accurate mm-hmm. in the league. I think that that has a little bit of a dated perspective just because some numbers at lower levels of football, in my opinion, are inflated because of, you know, the bubble screen, kind of the jet sweep completions, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. different ways to manufacture completions. But if you look at throws that beyond the line of scrimmage and can get a gauge on what a real completion percentage is, you know, I've seen guys make better decisions would turn into better completions. But, you know, at some point you are what you are as far as your ball control and what you're able to do consistently driving the ball. I think you can get better and get more consistent. But, you know, if you can't hit the broadside of a barn in college, you know, you're probably not going to play a lot on Sundays.
Do you think that's easier to learn while like training and being in practice field and stuff like that? Especially those kind of things, obviously, like learning the game and stuff, you have to do that also in the trainer's room. But the whole thing of getting more accurate, fixing your footwork, all that stuff. Do you think you can learn that quicker by playing or by studying once you are at the NFL level?
I think the majority of those things are off-season projects.
Okay.
If you're trying to do that, you know, in training camp or during the season, you don't have a chance. Mm-hmm. You definitely don't have a chance to maximize the kind of outcome. I think that those are off-season projects. I know personally for me, I used to take one or two things, usually just one thing every off-season, and really try to incorporate that into my game, whether it was footwork, whether it was off-platform throws, whether it was throws outside the numbers, something that I wanted to make a significant improvement in. And I think a lot of players do this where they take a handful of things and focus on it. And for me, you know, whether it's footwork, whether it's the drop, the back of the drop, whether mm-hmm. it's my throwing platform, trying to incorporate that so that, you know, at the end of 10 years, you know, all of a sudden you've looked back and you're like, wow, I made significant strides. I got, you know, much better at this. Yeah, well, you put in a decade. And so mm-hmm, that's why I think sometimes it feels a little bit stunted or rushed, or guys aren't making the progress that they want because they've only been at it for, you know, a pro for 18 months or something like that. So it's about compounding that improvement to give yourself the best opportunity to maximize that career.
I think that's a perfect transition actually to one of the prospects in this year's draft. That's Trey Lance, who maybe you disagree, but it's kind of the obvious name to discuss when talking about like being kind of raw, still having to work on mechanics and stuff like that. Doesn't have a lot of experience, obviously, at the college level. Hasn't played last year. How do you see him and how raw is he actually in your opinion?
I don't think he's that raw. I would push back to that. I would say, unfortunately, again, and this is where luck comes into so much of this stuff, hasn't gotten an opportunity to play recently. You know, I think he's played as much as Mac Jones has played. Mac Jones played recently. Mm-hmm. And so it is harder to, you know, just kind of be able to hold it present in your mind. I think when you think, gosh, you know, it hasn't played in forever, didn't play, you know, showcase game, you know, different level of competition. He's also, I think, younger than the vast majority of those guys. I think he's got, he's a really exciting prospect. Mm-hmm. The other part about what I do specifically is my quote unquote analysis or takes on these guys is based off just film. Like all these teams and organizations are having conversations with these guys. They know the development that has happened from, you know, fall of 2019 to now and what that projects in their organization, where we're still all looking at the same old film, you know, so it's, there's been a significant growth. And when you're a younger guy, that growth is even bigger. And so for me, I'm a big fan of Trey Lance. I think he's got some pretty special talent as far as being able to throw the ball, being an athlete, being dynamic at that level. I love that program that he comes from. The Bison are great. And, you know, it's one of those things too, where similar to almost like the Ohio State thing for former quarterbacks recently, where now, you know, everybody kind of thinks Carson Wentz, you know, didn't really work out. And so it's hard to separate the prospect from the institution over here. And so, you know, just being able to project what he looks like, if you were just looking at the projections over the next year, I think many teams would be really excited about the opportunity that Trey Lance would bring to their organization.
And probably right from talking about just talking about the tools, and he's developed in some areas already, but just talking about the tools, you could probably argue that Trey Lance has maybe the highest ceiling in this class. I mean, you don't want it to get too hot takey, but obviously you could argue that, right? Because he has like the arm, he has the athleticism, he can run kind of like a Cam Newton type of runner. He does have a significant ceiling, which NFL teams have to basically project, right? If they want to pick him top five, top eight, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make that argument. I don't know if I would agree with the argument. I think you could more easily make the argument that he's got the biggest room for growth, and that growth would be on. And so that part of it, I think, would be as exciting as anything else with the prospect wise, because you're right. He does show so many traits that I think a lot of teams would love for that position to have, what that position has evolved into recently. And when you go back and look at the film, you know, he's a younger guy in that system. So what they were asking him to do would be significantly different if he was a veteran in that program, having played for 3 years and, you know, being in a lot more command and more dynamic in the volume of stuff that they were carrying. So I think that it's a difficult take for any like real substance on our end, on my end, because you're looking at old stuff, right? And it's hard to make that connection just with the craziness that this year plus has been with what that looks like. I think it'll be fascinating, not to go off on a total side note, but to look back on how the pandemic influenced that kind of recency bias, because a number of players decided to not play. Mm-hmm. And so what teams do, you know, does one team make a run on guys who sat out, who didn't play, that are maybe undervalued because of recency bias? Or, you know, some teams stay away from guys who didn't play because they think they're all about, you know, selfish guys, didn't care about the team. So there'll be kind of a unique take on what that plays out. It'd be fun to go back in like a half decade and see how all these picks sort themselves out.
Yeah, definitely. You already touched on another topic here that I just wanted to ask when talking about Trey Lance, but you could also kind of project it to other prospects in this class. You touched on the aspect of being able to create, to throw off platform, all that stuff. Where do you come on the question, like, do you think a quarterback has to be able to do that in today's NFL? It is kind of is where the league is going. When you look like, who are the top quarterbacks, obviously there's Tom Brady, but, you know, I mean, you probably won't find Tom Brady again, but the other quarterbacks are able to do more stuff outside of structure and outside the pocket, basically.
Yeah, I mean, question there: do you have to do it? No, but are there Tom Brady's, Drew Brees's, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning's? Those types of guys are just more and more rare. Doesn't mean that they'll never. You know, I think Mac Jones has the potential to kind of fall into that space a little bit. But I think if you were going to ask many people across the landscape of the league, which would they prefer if they could have a young quarterback? I think all of them, the vast majority of people would say want somebody who has the ability to create. Now, that's always a double edge because, you know, sometimes you can, you know, manufacture things or not just learn to play the play that's available. And so it's about finding that sweet spot that it seems like many guys have, but it sure is nice to have that kind of club in your bag when you can realize, hey, it's not perfect. I can go create. I can go get a first down with my legs. I can do so many things that help a young quarterback be able to kind of learn on the run that, you know, using that athleticism, whether it's throwing off platform, whether it's getting outside the pocket, creating, throwing down the field, scramble drill, using your legs, design runs in the red zone. All those things just make you more dynamic and tough to handle.
And there's probably something to the idea of kind of getting a quarterback used to the NFL, because when he has the potential to run and can create a little bit and can get himself out of bad situations, which obviously a rookie quarterback will get himself into more bad situations than a veteran usually, but that's probably also a factor, right? Because the quarterbacks who can create, who can run, they have more possibilities to get out of a situation, whereas a pocket passer doesn't. And he has to be so much quicker in really adapting to NFL speed, NFL defenses, all that stuff.
Yes. And I would add, you know, the type of defenses that you see when you're more of a dual threat or perceived as a dual threat quarterback usually are a little bit cleaner. You know, you're not going to see quite as exotic of coverages, maybe on third down, those types of things where people are going to spy you. You know, they're not going to blitz or rush quite as much because they're terrified you're going to break contain and go get a big chunk yourself. And so it just changes the game. It really does. And I think that's why they're so valued. That's why you see, you know, you look across the draft this year and you've got some really unbelievable talent at the top of the draft, and they're all athletic guys that can kind of create on their own when they get the opportunity to.
Yeah, and the kind of the outlier, if you will, then is Mac Jones, right? And you already mentioned him. How do you see him, and is he a quarterback in today's NFL that you as a GM would be comfortable taking, I don't know, top 10, top 12? Is it like, are you that optimistic about him developing into a really franchise pocket passer, because he obviously doesn't have the mobility that the other four guys have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's any reason for me to think that he couldn't develop into that. I think that your question, meaning would I be comfortable enough taking him that early in the draft, the answer is probably no. You know, I probably wouldn't, especially with what I perceive as the surrounding guys around him available. If you had a significant need at that position, I feel like you could go other routes that give you a little bit fuller picture of options to be able to take advantage of what that position is currently doing across the landscape of the league. Now, that doesn't mean that he won't be able to have an unbelievable career in the league in the right situation. You know, so much of this is luck and hard to, you know, quantify without knowing the entire system. You look across Justin Herbert's a great example this year. Guy played unbelievably well, better than anybody probably could have projected. And, you know, he probably doesn't play if Taylor doesn't take a punctured lung, early in the season. And so, again, all these things, you know, all you can do is project where you think that they best fit. And I think Mac Jones has shown that he's got the ability to play at a very high level, obviously small sample size, but yeah, he wasn't able to beat out Jalen Hurts and Tua. Well, yeah, so was it, you know, damn near everybody else. And so when he got his opportunity, he made a great run and played really well. It was fun to watch Alabama this year. I thought they were better in some regards and different on offense. And I think he can definitely translate to Sundays. It's just not what some of the other skill sets are of some of those other guys projected that early in the draft for me.
You need like perfect situation more for him than for the other guys. Would you agree with that? Like you need a better offensive line, probably a little bit better weapons so that you can really, I don't know, win playoff games or whatever you want to like put as a goal. Ultimately, with Mac Jones compared to the other four to be a little bit broader in the picture?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I could go out and say that you need to have better people around him. I think it would just be a different offense. It would be different. They would be asked to do so many different things. And so it would be a little bit more, old school-y, you know, a little more like a decade ago in the league. Now, it's certainly possible. You know, you look across the landscape of the league, and there are guys who have done it for a really long time as distributors. You know, that's all, you know, I'm a huge fan of Phillip Rivers. I love how he played the position. He was not doing anything outside the pocket.
Yeah.
And so, you know, can it? Sure. You know, I think the league also kind of goes in cycles. And right now it feels like the cycle is heavy, tilted towards that creative, you know, opportunity for the quarterback position, but it doesn't mean that it won't rotate back to a guy who can distribute the ball, be consistent, be the great decision maker, you know, for lack of a better term, like the game manager. But, you know, I'm not sure if that will ever fully happen, but it certainly could. And he certainly falls more on that side of it for me than a guy who's going to, you know, run the zone read.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he is the guy that like who the Niners wanted, pick number three. We don't know, but if you were, let's start one pick ahead. If you were the Jets, Trevor Lawrence goes first overall to the Jaguars. Who is your pick at two? And why do you like him? Like, who's the quarterback you want after Trevor Lawrence if he's the first pick?
It would be hard for me to pass on Justin Fields at that point. Mm-hmm. I know. Basically, I kind of feel the same way that I think the 49ers feel without ever saying it, just from their actions that they've made at this point. To me, they basically said, we're good with any of the top three. So we like all those three guys. It doesn't matter. You know, they don't get to control who the Jets pick. So they're basically saying the top three are good with us. And I'm this kind of the same way. I don't think that Trevor Lawrence is probably quite as good as everybody seems to want to anoint him. But I also think that Zach Wilson and Justin Fields, they're all kind of in that same tier for me. All great. Mm-hmm. Again, it's going to depend on where you go. You know, I think whoever goes third is probably in the best situation. But, you know, those things change quickly. And so, you know, it certainly sounds like they're infatuated with Zach Wilson. I think it's, you know, going to be a tough organization to go in there and win in that market with what they're doing right now as a kind of rebuild organization. But then that certainly impacts what the 49ers do at three. And that situation is tailor-made for someone to go in there and go rookie of the year right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably doesn't even matter all that much who they pick, right? Because probably he might be rookie of the year in terms of having great surroundings, having a great play caller and all that stuff. It's also kind of fascinating because we probably will have similar offenses. The Jets coming from the Niners tree and the Niners obviously with Shanahan, these offenses would probably not be fundamentally different. Let's put it like that. So there might even be a debate kind of who do you think is the better fit for specifically that offense, Wilson or Fields? And Wilson has like the rollout stuff and all that and throwing the ball downfield. But Fields might be the best in actually playing the middle of the field. So where do you come down when you kind of try to put the scheme thought within your thought process?
Well, that's the beautiful thing about what I do. I don't have to think about that at all. Those are all the decisions that you know, an NFL team would be thinking about. And you sounds like you know more about it than I do as far as who's at the Jets responsible for the offense. But I can tell you that I think all three of those guys would fit in any offense in the league. And they're all going to tailor make the schemes and things that they ask the quarterback to do based on what they think that they do really well. I think both Fields and Zach Wilson do a really nice job of throwing the ball all over the field. I know that there are certain metrics out there that show that he doesn't do quite as well between the hashes or things like that based on what they were asking him to do. There's no reason to think accurate as he has outside the numbers as he could in the middle of the field. And so for me, it's a little bit more about, you know, what they're asking him to do, what are his weapons around them look like. And I think that they either Justin Fields or Zach Wilson would be successful in that type of offense, that Shanahan wide zone play action type of offense.
You already mentioned Trevor Lawrence quickly, and you said that you're like not as high as the broader media, which is quite high. A lot of people saying that he's like the best prospect since Andrew Luck and has been since coming out of high school and whatnot. So maybe from another perspective, what's your biggest concern just from his tape, but with Trevor Lawrence?
Having high expectations for him forever. You kind of alluded to the fact that he's been the number one guy for, you know, seems like half a decade and came on the scene so quickly as a freshman playing at such a high level that it's hard to live up to those expectations. I would just say the thing that doesn't sit well with me, and there's a lot, there's everything, not everything, damn near everything to love about Trevor Lawrence. I think the things that I have kind of hawed and hemmed about, if that's a phrase, is just the fact that maybe he hasn't played his best in the biggest moments, you know, and kind of got outplayed by Fields. And, you know, kind of got outplayed in a few other big games. And it just, you know, I don't know if that's a pattern, whether if I was making that type of investment as an organization, I would want to feel really good in that someone, that the guy we're going with is someone who's rising to the occasion, who's put kind of the evidence there on film that he can play his best when it matters the most and things like that. I think it's easy to take a shot. Hey, the ACC is not that whatever robust. And that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. I'm talking about kind of the biggest moments. Was he the biggest guy? And I don't know if that was always the case. And I'm not, that's not necessarily a disqualifier, but it brings me back down to when I think of the elite, you know, like John Elway, Peyton Manning, a little bit of Andrew Luck. Those guys to me were they were no doubters. And to me, it's, you know, I talk myself into a few of these doubts. And so that's why I kind of talk about it in those types of tiers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. Maybe just one last question. Do you have a quarterback after those we talked about, like the big four, big five, however you want to rank them, but do you have a quarterback in this, let's say day two category, Trask, Kellen Mond, whoever, Jamie Newman for some people, is there one that you like, or is it for you, you have like the first round guys and then there's this huge drop off and maybe you get one to develop, but that's basically it.
I would say you already touched on, you know, I think everybody's on Trey Lance. The next one for me would be Kellen Mond. Mm-hmm. I like Kellen Mond a lot. I thought he played really well the vast majority of his opportunities. He is, you know, visually stiff. You know, I think that's the easy negative. I think it's one of those things to me, and this is a kind of an outlier example, but I remember Aaron Rodgers coming out of college and he was stiff. You know, he held the ball high. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it was something that, you know, if you get in the right situation, those things can be easily fixed. That's an example of an easy fix. And so if he gets to the right situation, and the other thing about it, and we talked about it a little bit, but, you know, congratulations, you know, you're the number one pick. You go to the worst organization.
Yeah.
As opposed to being the, you know, maybe late in the first round and you go to a great organization and you maybe get a chance to sit for a little bit and learn from someone who does it at a really high level. All those things are kind of what happened to Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. You know, they're not rushed into a crummy situation and have to go out there and get their face kicked in every single Sunday. And so that is a great opportunity for a lot of those guys. Kellen Mond is probably the top of that group for me, but there's a lot of guys in that kind of second tier, Davis Mills, Trask, Jamie Newman. Jamie Newman kind of falls into the Trey Lance thing for me as far as, you know, just the recency element of it, having gotten a chance to see, didn't work out, you know, at Georgia, that type of thing. And so again, those picks and how those things sort themselves out are kind of an underlying storyline for this draft for me.
JT, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got a very tight schedule, so really appreciated you taking the time to come here. And everybody check out the YouTube channel. We'll link it to QB School, and I hope we can do this again at some point.
I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thank you.